All right. Will the 49ers beat the Seattle Seahawks? We do this every week that the 49ers have a game. We answer the question. The question will be answered at the end of the show. But before then, we go through the keys to the game. So everybody, welcome in. This is a later show than usual on a Wednesday evening. My mom was flying from Fresno to Prague, or is flying from Fresno to Prague. So the path for her was Fresno, SFO, SFO, Munich, Munich to Prague. They should be taken off to Munich in about 25 minutes. That meant that she was passing through San Francisco, so I went down and had dinner with her at the airport. That's why we're starting a little bit later. And my parents will be here for the Chiefs game. That's next week. That's October, 23rd, I want to say. First, the 49ers are going to play the Seattle Seahawks on October 10th. That is tomorrow. At this time tomorrow, we will know the result of 49ers Seahawks. We'll have an actual answer to that question. Will the 49ers beat the Seahawks? Key number one, force Geno Smith to pass as much as he's been passing. Geno Smith has attempted 199 throws in five games this season. That is the most attempts in the NFL. The Seahawks are the pass happiest team in the league. It has not paid off for them over the course of the past 2 weeks. The two best teams probably that they've played so far this year have both beaten them, although I'm not sure about the New York Giants. But the Detroit Lions are definitely the best team that the Seahawks have faced so far. And Seattle was unable to keep up in a track meet. There was a lot of passing, especially from Seattle in that game. Jared Goff only threw 18 times and he was perfect. So efficient football beat pass happy football a couple weeks ago on Monday night in Detroit. The 49ers need to play efficient football on their side, and they'll be happy if the Seahawks cannot establish a run game. Kenneth Walker has been one of the best backs in football in his very small allotment of carries so far this year. So if you're the 49ers, you want to keep it that way. Keep Kenneth Walker away from the ball. Make Geno Smith pass as much as possible. So stop the run to have some fun. Earn your right to rush the passer. If you do so, you can take advantage of key number two, which is to literally take advantage of Seattle's offensive line. In both pass block win rate and run block win rate, the Seahawks rank number 30. It's almost last. It's third from last in the NFL. They've not had a good offensive line in years. The defensive line has fallen off too, and I don't think that that defensive line is very strong right now without Ochenna-Nwosu, with Byron Murphy II, the defensive tackle, not playing. They have some guys back, some guys they didn't have against Detroit when Goff went 18 of 18. But the Seahawks definitely don't have everybody back. But anyway, I'm talking about their O-line. Their O-line has not been good in run blocking or pass blocking, which is one reason why they haven't been able to establish the run game the way that they've wanted to with Kenneth Walker, who's a really good running back. 49ers can keep it that way, pin their ears back, rush the passer. This can be a game where they've done it multiple consecutive times against Geno Smith. They have overwhelmed the pocket. They want to continue overwhelming the pocket against the Seattle Seahawks. And the way that you do that is if you force Geno Smith to pass. It starts with stopping the run if you're the 49ers. Discourage them from running, force them to pass. Now, if that happens, we can skip forward to key number five, because keys three and four are 49ers offensive keys. But key number five is Charvarius Ward has got to rediscover some consistency. I would say that right now, Mooney Ward has been the 49ers' worst cornerback. Deommodore Lenoir has been the best, and then we can debate between Isaac Yiadom and Charvarius Ward, but he hadn't played as the cornerback one that the 49ers need him to play as. And, you know, maybe with Lenoir stepping up the way that he has, the 49ers don't need anything insane from Charvarius Ward, but they need better play than they've seen so far. I made the video about it earlier this afternoon, walking down Dolores Street in San Francisco. Ward has allowed a rating of 99.5 into his coverage, which is the worst so far of his career. He's been in the NFL for seven seasons. DK Metcalf is one of the Seahawks' many weapons. There's also Tyler Lockett. There's also Jackson Smith and the Jigba. This is a team that can throw downfield. Geno Smith has aired it out 200 times over five games. Geno Smith's efficiency may not be at the very top of the league, but it's still good enough to where if Seattle does throw the ball a lot, like I say the 49ers want with key number one, if they're having breakdowns in coverage, if Charvarius Ward can't cover DK Metcalf, if nobody can get on DK Metcalf consistently, the Seahawks can hurt the 49ers. So the missing puzzle piece for San Francisco here is consistent consistency from Charvarius Ward. You heard John Lynch on KNBR this morning. I mean, he was stern. John Lynch, I mean, he realizes that the 49ers are in a vulnerable spot right now. He realizes they need to turn this around. Well, one of the pivot points to turn this around is Charvarius Ward. We'll say this until this game is done, and we'll say it every single time the 49ers play Seattle, because this harkens back to last year. Charvarius Ward was supposed to play on a half last year of the field. He was supposed to patrol that half of the field, the left cornerback spot, and not leave it. Well, Kyle Shanahan had other ideas. He said, we need you to trail and shadow DK Metcalf. If he crosses the formation from your left side to the right side, I want you following him. And that's something the 49ers do not usually ask their cornerbacks to do. But they asked Charvarius Ward, who was in the middle of an all-pro season last year, to do it. He held DK Metcalf to one catch. 49ers beat the Seahawks 31-13. This is a Seattle team. Again, they've thrown 199 times. They have a lot of weapons. Kenneth Walker is one of those weapons, even in the past game. But I listed the top three receivers. Every single 49ers DB is going to have to be on top of his P's and Q's. And it has to start with the marquee name in Charvarius Ward. Now, we could also carry this key over to the safety position. Talanoa Hufanga is on injured reserve. 49ers officially placed him there today. We can take a look at the article that I wrote up on the San Francisco Standard. Help promote that. Let me get this up on the screen. Because as we're talking about Ward, I think that the natural segue is talking about Hufanga, who is not going to play in this football game. He's on IR, so he's going to be out for at least 4 weeks. They were already expecting about a month. This means that it's going to be a start for Malik Mustafa. Second career start for the young 49er safety, the rookie out of Wake Forest. If we're talking about Charvarius Ward rediscovering consistency, Malik Mustafa is going to have to discover consistency for the first time. I don't think he's been bad, but I think that they need him to take yet another step forward, because winning at Seattle, especially with the weapons that Seattle has downfield, is not going to be easy. Great pass breakup last week from Malik Mustafa. I think he's shown that he's definitely got the ability to play at that high safety position at the NFL level. Remember that was a little bit of a question mark. He's a ball of muscle. He was near the line of scrimmage a lot in college, but he was also playing deep safety. He runs a 4-4, so you know he has speed. He actually has more speed than Talanoa Hufanga. But did he have the instincts and the wherewithal to play safety at the NFL level, where things are moving really quickly, where the timing routes are going to take advantage of half-yard windows? I think the pass breakup last week was a good thumbs up in the right direction for Malik Mustafa. This is going to be another test. It's always dangerous to play with young safeties. The 49ers safety coverage hasn't been great this year from Jair Brown. George Odom got burned early in the season. They moved to Hufanga. Hufanga, it's been too many injuries, three different injuries. He came back from the ACL, then the ankle turn, and then the torn ligaments in the wrist for Talanoa. Been too many injuries to really evaluate how he played. He saw one and a half games of action. So it's Mustafa's time now, and he's going to be facing some good receivers and an experienced quarterback with the Seattle Seahawks. So combine that with Charvarius Ward, and there's your test for the 49ers secondary. All right, that was key number five. We skipped over three and four. Again, one, force Geno Smith to pass as much as he's been passing. Two, take advantage of Seattle's number 30 O-line. Now we move to three. This is the 49ers on the offensive side of the ball. Capitalize on Seattle's weak front. I mentioned no Uchenna-Nwosu, edge rusher. He's heading to injured reserve. No Byron Murphy, the second defensive tackle. He's going to be out for at least another week, so the 49ers miss him. Yeah, they're not going to miss guys like Boye Mafe, who wasn't in the game when Seattle faced the Detroit Lions. There's a reason why Jared Goff was able to go 18 of 18. It was embarrassing regardless of who Seattle had in there to have Jared Goff pitch a perfect game against you, but it was at least understandable. It was embarrassing yet understandable for the Seahawks because they were missing so many guys. They've got a few of those guys back, but they're still weakened up front. And the 49ers and Brock Purdy need to take advantage of that. I think it's even more important that the 49ers take advantage of it in the run game than in the pass game. Because, I mean, we can see here, I was showing so much of this a little bit earlier today, but this is one of the crazy charts that, you know, people I don't think necessarily expected heading into the season. This is pass blocking and run blocking on an XY axis. The run blocking is found on the X axis. So the further you are to the right, the better your run blocking is. The higher up you are on the Y axis, on the vertical axis, the better your pass blocking is. Well, look where the 49ers are. Their pass blocking is significantly better than their run blocking so far this year. So yes, of course you can capitalize on Seattle's weak front by pass blocking well, but they can also throw blitzes, and San Francisco struggled to pick some of those up. So I think that the more straightforward way to win this game is to execute the rushing offense better than you've been executing it. The 49ers without Christian McCaffrey look like this as far as rushing efficiency goes. I was replying to Emmanuel Acho's tweet. In 2022, without McCaffrey, they ranked number 23 in rushing EPA. In 2022, after they traded for McCaffrey, they ranked number 2 in EPA. In 2023, when they had McCaffrey the whole year, they ranked number 1 in rushing expected points added. This season, without Christian McCaffrey, the 49ers have ranked number 20. So they're a number 20 or worse rushing team efficiency-wise without McCaffrey, and they're a top 2 rushing team with him. That's what the data from the past 3 seasons tells us. The data from the past 3 seasons also tells us that this year they are blocking for the run worse than they're blocking for the pass. But they're playing a Seattle front that is weakened right now, and I think it's tremendously important that the 49ers run the football efficiently in this game. They were terrible when it came to rushing efficiency last week against the Arizona Cardinals. Downright terrible. They were like a negative 0.26 EPA per rush. They didn't really get it going consistently, and it wasn't even consistent. They didn't really even get the run game going till late in the game when it was triple digits and Arizona's defense was worn down, just like the 49ers' defense was worn down. And then once there was a semblance of truly getting it going late in the game, Jordan Mason fumbled it away, and the 49ers lost the game. So you can't turn it over, and you've got to be efficient. Because key number 4 is red zone execution. The 49ers rank number 30 in red zone touchdown rate this year. They ranked number 1 last season. They're number 30. They've scored red zone touchdowns only 40% of the time. It's got to be better than that. They were at 68% last year. Nearly a 30-point drop-off. And the main reason is that they're not running the ball efficiently in the red zone. Way too many second and 10s, second and 9s, second and 8s. If you're going to run the ball from the 16, well, you got to get it to the 10 on first down. So it could be second and 4 from the 10. Huge difference between second and 4 from the 10 versus second and 8 from the 14-yard line, especially with the condensed space in the red zone. McCaffrey sees holes and hits holes that you don't even realize are there right now when McCaffrey isn't playing. I'm not saying that Jordan Mason has been bad. I'm saying that he's not Christian McCaffrey, and the 49ers haven't been efficient on the aggregate between the run blocking and what Mason has done. Obviously, the efficiency has been hurt by the fumble last week, which was definitely bad on Jordan Mason's part. So they have to find a way to execute in the red zone, and that's going to start with capitalizing on Seattle's weak front by running the football well. This is a tough environment to play in. And the Seahawks, even without Uchenna Nwosu, even without Byron Murphy the second, they're going to have the benefit of the loud environment. They're going to be able to try to jump snap counts. There's going to be some confusion. There always is. That's just how it works in a loud divisional game on the road. That is going to give Seattle's defense an advantage. You neutralize that advantage by running the football, because the advantage of the loud crowd most shines through in pass rushing. when the silent count and the communication of the offense is hampered by the loud crowd on second down and long and third down and long, that's where a home team can really face the problems of being on the road. But if you run for four, for five, or for six on first down consistently, then all of a sudden you take the wind out of the sails of the crowd. And you could win the game, and within the game you could win in the red zone, which is going to lead to winning the game. I normally have five keys. Today I have six. Consistent football. Special teams falls under this umbrella. It's interesting because the 49ers are number 31 in special teams, second to last. They moved up a spot thanks to the field goal block and a touchdown last week. So it's going to take a lot more good plays to make up the hole that they dug for themselves over the first few weeks of the season. We normally talk about the Seahawks as a team that's excellent on special teams. Under Pete Carroll, that had almost consistently been the case. They beat the 49ers twice in 2021, thanks largely to special teams. But Seattle's under a new coaching staff now, Mike McDonald. And early in this season, they ranked number 27 in special teams. So it's going to be a battle of two special teams units that haven't been good on the aggregate so far this year. When we talk about consistent football, delivering in the third phase of the game is very, very important. So those are the six keys. Another key, number seven, drink a lot of water. That's what I'm going to do right now. This is all part of, will the 49ers beat the Seahawks? We got 2,000 of you in here, total viewers. We're going to get ready to answer the question in just a few minutes. Let's check in with Mike. Mike, where are we at right now? Let me know the magic number. You guys don't know what the magic number is, but Mike will let me know what the magic number is, and then I will know how to proceed. Waiting for Mike's response. Hopefully Mike's there. I know it's late. I know Mike was there a few minutes ago, but maybe he's away from the computer for just a second. Either way, I could keep on talking. I could keep on discussing the keys. Again, we're going to go through them just very briefly, those of you just joining. Force Geno Smith to pass as much as he's been passing. That's going to take good run defense. Seattle's O-line is not good. They're Bosa, every single time the 49ers have played the Seahawks, and these have been all wins since 2021. So in 2022, they played them three times, including the playoff game, 3-0 in favor of the 49ers. In 2023, they played them twice, both wins for San Francisco. So the 49ers have won five straight against Seattle, and every time they've racked up the pressures, racked up the sacks, the quarterback hits, they have another chance to do so in this game because Seattle is not necessarily playing good football up front. They're not playing good football on the defensive front either because they're hurt. Seattle started this year three games with a number two EPA defensively in all of football. Now, they were facing Skylar Thompson, Bo Nix, and Jacoby Brissett. I'm sure that helped things because as soon as they faced Jared Goff, they gave up a perfect game. But also when they faced Jared Goff, they were really hurt. So the front is not strong right now. Until they prove that they have a good front, especially given a couple of the injuries that they have, I don't believe in the Seahawks up front. 49ers shouldn't be believing in them either. They need to find a way to execute in the run game, even though they've struggled in the run game. Sometimes it's going to take passing to set up the run. That's what it did last week, but then the 49ers fumbled it away. So regardless of what you need to do, either Seattle lines up in six-man fronts and bare fronts to try to take out the 49ers run game. If they do that, you've got to pass to set up the run. If they don't, if they come out in zone, you say, oh, okay, fine. We'll run against you to open the game. Either way, you establish it if you're the 49ers. And you set things up for the late game. So last week, it was passing to set up the run in the late game. They did that all well, but then Jordan Mason fumbled. So the big key, and that's why number six, I have consistent football, avoiding giveaways falls under that umbrella. It's funny, the 49ers actually have a better turnover differential than the Seahawks. The 49ers are at zero, same amount of giveaways and takeaways. The Seahawks are at -3. So my point is that neither of these two teams has been great statistically. The Seahawks are coming off of a couple ugly losses. They gave up the perfect game to Jared Goff, and then they lost by 9 points to Daniel Jones and the New York Giants. They're obviously not world beaters, and because of that, I have the answer to this question. We've got over 2,200 of you in here, so I don't want to make you wait too long. Will the 49ers beat the Seahawks? I will say yes. Now, here's the thing. I know Tim Kawakami actually picked Seattle to win, and that piece is up on the Standard. Let's get that open. Let's get Tim's prediction. Let's see what Tim's prediction is. You guys are going to give Tim a hard time for this, I know, but I know he doesn't care. These are the five fast predictions. Tim goes down here. I'm going to read the rationale for both of them. We're going to highlight it, put it up on the screen. And then after, I'm going to show you guys how to sign up for the San Francisco Standard for free. But Tim writes, Seahawks 27, 49ers 24. And he says, this is a gut test game for the 49ers, who have been very good in tough situations in the Shanahan era. But I can't pick them to win this without McCaffrey and with obvious kicking questions, which we'll get to in a bit. Of course, this will probably come down to a last-minute field goal try. A victory could turn the season around. I wouldn't rule it out, but I'll guess that the 49ers fall just short. So, in short, Tim says that this game will come down to a field goal. He predicts that the 49ers will have kicking trouble with Matthew Wright, who's the fill-in for Jake Moody, who has a high ankle sprain. And he thinks that Seattle's a really tough place to play, and the Seahawks are going to win 27-24, based obviously a lot on the 49ers' current struggles. My prediction, and I explained it, my rationale is here. I said 49ers 30, Seahawks 24. I said, or I wrote, when it comes to overcoming shaky starts, the 49ers have earned the benefit of the doubt over the past few seasons. And on paper, they're still better than Seattle in just about every facet of the game. But if the 49ers also squander this opportunity, that benefit of the doubt will have expired. Their backs are up against the wall. Let's gauge the response to that. My main theme is that the 49ers have earned the benefit of the doubt. I think that you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. In 2021, they were 2-4, then they were 3-5, then they dug themselves out of the hole, and they went to the NFC Championship game. In 2022, they were 1-2, and then they were 3-4. They dug themselves out of that hole, and they finished in the NFC Championship game. I think they were the best team in football that year. If Brock Purdy hadn't torn his elbow in Philadelphia, I think they would have won the Super Bowl. Last season, they did start 5-0, but then this is the week they started losing. Starting in week 6, they lost 3 in a row. They were 5-3. People counted them out. But they crawled out of that after the bye week in Jacksonville, and they finished in the Super Bowl. So that's 3 years of struggles in the first half for the 49ers, followed by the team turning it around. I believe this team has established the benefit of the doubt. Yes, there are new players in a lot of positions, the depth positions especially, but the core of star players has stayed the same. That is your rudder, or that should be your rudder as a football team, and I think that the 49ers have it. Now, if they lose this game, I think the benefit of the doubt has expired. I'll be like, okay, wait, what's with this team? They've had a couple strikes, and that would be strike three. They wouldn't be eliminated, but my benefit of the doubt that I'm giving the 49ers wouldn't be there anymore. I'd probably pick them to lose against the Kansas City Chiefs the following week. But we're not at that point yet, if you're the 49ers. We are still at the point of them having a couple borderline fluky losses. Now, I get we've explained why they lost. We've criticized what went wrong for the 49ers. But if you think that the LA Rams roster is better than San Francisco's, and if you think that Arizona's roster is better than San Francisco's, and that those are going to end up as better teams than the 49ers, I have a bridge to sell you at this point. I think that the data indicates that San Francisco is going to be a better team in the long run. Yet they still blew double-digit leads on their way to losing those games. There were a couple plays in each game, maybe even one play in each game, that separated victory from defeat for the 49ers. In the past, when they have lost, and they have lost, I don't want to say plentifully, but multiple times early in the season, the 49ers, with their backs up against the wall, have responded to deliver wins that have corrected the course of their season. So I think as long as they have that benefit of the doubt, we can predict that they're going to do the same thing moving forward. They are, and I wrote this, they are stronger than the Seattle Seahawks in essentially every phase of the game. When you talk about Brock Purdy against Geno Smith, Brock Purdy is clearly a better quarterback than Geno Smith. Now, running back, maybe Kenneth Walker. You could say he's stronger than Jordan Mason. You wouldn't be able to say it if Christian McCaffrey was in the lineup, but fine. Give the running back position to Seattle. Offensive line, the Seahawks are number 30 in both run block and pass block win rate. As frustrated as 49ers fans tend to be with the 49ers offensive line, which, by the way, ranks in the top 10 in pass block win rate. They've been doing fine in that regard. So as frustrated as you might be with them, those guys are better than Seattle's unit. Receiving wise, yeah, Seattle's got Metcalf. They've got Lockett, who's older now. They've got the younger guy. They've got Jackson, the younger guy. But the 49ers, they have Brandon Ayuk coming off a, 150-plus yard game. They've got Deebo Samuel, all pro. They've got Juwan Jennings, who I think is healthy now following the hand injury that slowed him down last week. 49ers have, and but you, I mean, you should also combine George Kittle into that mix. So the tight end position is an advantage, and the receiving position, I think, is an advantage for the 49ers in that regard as well. Defensive line, especially given the beleaguered state of Seattle's front, give it to the 49ers. San Francisco has Fred Warner. The Seattle Seahawks don't. Defensive backfield, no Reek Woolen for the Seahawks. So I would even say that the 49ers secondary should have a talent advantage in this game. Point blank, the talent advantage still resides with the 49ers. They've beaten Seattle five straight times, largely due to this reason. The injury situation, which is actually worse with Seattle this time, is on the 49ers side. So they've got that edge, San Francisco does. They also had the edge against the Cardinals, and they also had it against the Rams. So that's why the 49ers have so much pressure on them to put it all together this time. But they do have that track record. They have the talent edge, and they have the track record, which is why I answer the question, will the 49ers beat the Seahawks, with a yes. All right, let's move on. The next part of this is a Q&A. So good questions, and I'm also going to put in the way that you can sign up for the San Francisco Standard email. I think you guys will all appreciate that. And I'm just checking to see how many of you we have watching right now. So it's going to be a very, very brief delay here. My phone is not loading very fast. Oh, there we go. Awesome. Cool. We got 2,581. Awesome. That's a big crowd. It's a very big crowd, and it's growing. So 49ers Q&A is going to begin in just a second. This is where you sign up for the Standard. So I was showing people earlier, click on the sports updates, and then you'll be able to put your email in there. I've already put my email in there. I demonstrated earlier, but every single article that I write, and there have been a lot of them already so far. These were the predictions, but you can have all these will show up in your inbox within a couple minutes. So I'm ready to answer your questions at this time. Kenny has a good question. Can the 49ers offense replicate plays they run with Christian McCaffrey with Deebo? I feel he can cure the red zone issues. I think that that's a good thought. I don't think you can replicate what Christian McCaffrey does because he's a unique player, but I do think that Deebo Samuel is a more efficient runner than Jordan Mason. He's got, Deebo's a singular talent in his own right. So I think that there's a reason why we've seen Deebo get some carries in the red zone already this season. I don't think he's as nimble of a route runner as Christian McCaffrey. Debo's just a totally different type of player. But I do think that there is real potential value that Deebo Samuel can give the 49ers in the red zone. And I would not be surprised to see him heavily featured there for the 49ers in this game. Julie asks, how close of a game will it be? I said 30-24. You guys saw the prediction up there. I will do a separate prediction video tomorrow, but those of you watching now, I guess it's a spoiler. For those of you watching right now, you've already heard. 30-24, 49ers over the Seattle Seahawks. I'm looking at more questions. Oh, I'm going to the game. Don't worry. I'm flying out tomorrow morning, though. My bag's not even packed yet, but I don't really need to take much to the airport. Tomorrow morning, flying up to Seattle and, well, to the hotel, then to the stadium. Then I'll sleep there for a night. Then I'll come back here to San Francisco. Shout out, by the way, I was just at the airport. Ran into Jeff from Eureka at the airport. He recognized me. So shout out to Jeff from Eureka, who flew back from Cambodia to San Francisco, transferred at SFO, and then was heading up to Eureka today. So I ran into him at the airport when I was seeing my mom on her layover, Fresno to San Francisco, out to Munich. So Jeff from Cambodia. Or no, Jeff coming from Cambodia. He's from Eureka. Big 49ers fan. David wants the link for the standard. David, I'm going to hook you up with the link right now. Just give me 1 second. The link for the standard is copied. I'm sending it to Mike. Mike, if you can please put that link up in the description, and I'm going to post it as a comment right now. So you can go sfstandard.com/newsletters. Oh boy, we got somebody with a 5:30 a.m. flight. I'm not that early tomorrow morning. I think I'm at like 9 something. I want to get in there for lunch. 5:30, that's aggressive, but hopefully it works out for you. Mike has added the link that's at the bottom of your screen. It's just sfstandard.com/newsletters. You can sign up for the sports articles to come to your email. It's extremely easy. Put in your email, one click. On last week's call, which I didn't listen to, I watched the game tape, but I haven't actually listened to the TV copy. But Tom Brady was the announcer. He said the 49ers haven't been calling motion, play action, or many deceptive plays, just shotgun, straight drop back, more predictable. Is this all because of no McCaffrey? Yes. I mean, it's because the rushing efficiency hasn't been great for the 49ers. That's the main thing. Again, I bring this back up onto the screen. Rushing efficiency is number 20. If the rushing efficiency is not good, then the 49ers will not be able to run the same type of stuff off the base of their run game. So you talk about the stem of the offense. The stem of the offense is the run game. If that run game is not threatening the way that it normally does, and if it's not putting the 49ers into the downs and distances that they want to be in, then they're not going to be able to run what they typically do in the pass game. This offense is so run game dependent as far as the stem and the branches off the stem. That's what makes this offense as great as it is when it's running well. But they're not getting that right now. So Brock Purdy's really having to work. He's throwing into tighter windows. He's having to throw more. He's having to throw deeper because Christian McCaffrey, on top of being the best runner in football, is also the best man coverage beater on the entire team. So man coverage is actually working much better than the 49ers against the 49ers than it did last year. Take a look at this. You guys are going to love this graphic. When it comes to man coverage, that's on the x-axis. Look where Brock Purdy's at. It's right here. He's average against man coverage. He's been good against zone, average against man. Last year, Brock Purdy was up here where Jaden Daniels was in terms of efficiency. This year, he's down here to the left. Not as good. So that's why the 49ers need a better, more efficient run game. Kenny asks, is there any projection for the amount of 49ers fans in attendance for this game? So I didn't report this. I'm just going to say it right now. This is not me reporting this. This is just me talking about Vivid Seats, who normally sends the projections, sent me another one in the email. And I didn't report this because I thought it was wrong. I was like, there's no way this can be right. But I swear, I got it in my email. So we'll see how close it is to being true. I'm just the messenger here. Seattle fans are going to hate this. They said that they expect 67% of the crowd to be 49ers fans. I don't believe it. This is what I got in my email. I don't believe it, so I didn't report it. It's never, I mean, it's been over 50% in other stadiums, and the 49ers averaged 50% across all the road games last year. But if they have 67% in Seattle on a Thursday, it just didn't make sense to me. So I think that something must have been wrong with Vivid Seats calculations. But I'm just telling you that the email I got from them said 67%. So Vivid Seats will be able to say, I told you so, if we show up tomorrow and it's a sea of red. Again, I don't think that's accurate. So take it with a grain of salt. Yeah, maybe it was a typo. Even if it's 67% Seattle, that would be impressive if it was 33% 49ers fans. But no, it said 67% 49ers faithful in the email. Look, I could find it right here. I could find it. I could read it to you. Here it is. Fan data. Niners Nation invades Seattle. It's from a vividseats.com email address. So it's not a fake email. And it says, and I'm reading this, Niners Nation is projected to take over Lumen Field this Thursday, according to Vivid Seats, the ticket marketplace. Vivid Seats proprietary data predicts that the faithful will invade Lumen Field and take up 67% of the stadium against the Seattle Seahawks. The matchup is one of the hottest NFL tickets this week with an average ticket price of $295. Fans are also traveling 620 miles on average to this Thursday's game, making it the second furthest traveled NFL game this week. So the furthest people are traveling is the Steelers at Raiders, 923 miles. That makes sense. A lot of fans traveling to Las Vegas. Both Raiders and Steelers fans. This one's at 620, and that implies that there are a lot of 49ers fans traveling up to Seattle. So they say 67%. I don't believe it. I'm just tipping you guys off to the email that I got, and we shall see what the truth ends up being. You guys, type in your guesses into the comment section. What percentage of the crowd do you think the 49ers are going to have with Seattle in Seattle tomorrow? Type it into the comments, the live comments section. I might put your percentage up there because I'm curious to know what people think. And then I'm very curious to know where this is actually going to be. Gordy thinks 50-50. Kenny thinks 70% Seattle, which, as Kenny pointed out, that would still be really, really impressive from the 49ers' point of view. Felipe thinks 40% 49ers. So I think that the consensus is 30 to 40% 49ers. Samuel is a little bit more optimistic. He thinks it's going to be 60-40 Niners. I think it's fascinating because we saw the 49ers fans take over SoFi Stadium in LA. Last year, the 49ers, Vivid Seats said on average, they had about 48 to 50% of crowds across all their road games, which has never been recorded before. It just speaks to the brand power of the franchise. And all the 49ers need to do is win a Super Bowl. I don't know if they want to call themselves America's team, but I think that based on all the jersey sales, they broke all those records last year. Based on these fan invasions where they've got 50% across the stadiums on average, if they had a Super Bowl, then Dallas would not rightfully be able to call itself America's team. All the numbers would be in the 49ers' favor. It's just that Super Bowl drought for the 49ers has lasted those 30 years at this point. Joshua thinks the 49ers are going to go 3-0 over the next 3 weeks and right the ship. All right, Josh. Has Trent Williams been as dominant as usual this season? Not through the first month, but I thought that he put some really good tape on film down the stretch of the Patriots game and then over the Cardinals game. I think he was really good. A lot of people are pointing to the Mason fumble play. Sometimes you just get beat. A lot of 49ers got beat there, especially George Kittle ended up on his back, but Jordan Mason fumbled. That was the worst part of that play. But the Williams situation has been one of he needs to get into shape, and I think he has. He played his way into shape. I've told this story many times. He told me in the locker room after the season opener that his tongue was cramping against the Jets. That's how dehydrated he was. So he needed to play his way into shape after the holdout. I think he has, and I think he's playing really well for the 49ers now. Trent Williams, definitely not the problem for San Francisco. Niners finish 11-6. Will that make? Of course 11-6 will make it. 11-6 is a good record. I think I predicted 12-5 at the start of the year. That'd be one win short of that. Yeah, 11-6, you'd be sitting pretty if you're the 49ers. You could still lose three more times to make it to 11-6. What's my assessment of McKivitz at this point? McKivitz, I think, is about performed about the same, maybe a little bit better in pass blocking, but he's definitely been better in run blocking for the 49ers. The run blocking has some promising ingredients, even though the running ranks number 20 right now in efficiency, but that's not all in the blocking. Most of that is because they don't have Christian McCaffrey, but they have not been afraid to run right, and they've run right successfully at times behind Colton McKivitz, which is, I think, a significant development for the 49ers. How about Fred being defensive player of the year? The 49ers can surge and win the division. That's very possible. But as is the case with most individual awards, you have to win football games. 49ers have not been winning enough football games, so we're not going to be talking 49ers in the MVP race and in the defensive player of the year race until that happens. Brendel has taken a lot of the heat off of McKivitz. Yeah, Brendel didn't start well. I think he's gotten a little bit better. Remember, the 49ers are top 10 in pass block win rate now. So this is the best that we've seen their pass protection in quite some time. It's just so they're going to get Christian McCaffrey back. It's so hard to gauge how exactly good this team is going to be without its best player. I think Christian McCaffrey is the 49ers' best player. I think Brock Purdy is their most valuable player. But McCaffrey's damn valuable too. And until he comes back, they're not going to be able to beat man coverage as effectively. They're not going to be able to run as effectively. They have to bridge that gap without him for at least another week. I don't know how long exactly it's going to be, but they have to bridge the gap without him, get better in the red zone, and find a way to win in Seattle. Rushing efficiency is defined by expected points added per play. So Mason can rip off a 25-yard run, and this is what Jacob asked. He's got a ton of yards. What's up with the efficiency? Yeah, there could be a 25-yard run at the end of the game, but that's not going to count nearly as much as, okay, what does Mason do on first and 10 in the goal in the red zone? If it's only a 2-yard gain, that's going to be bad for the efficiency. That's why expected points, EPA, it factors in down and distance. Factors in game situation, spot on the field. It'll dock you for fumbles too. So raw yardage, yeah, Mason may be way up there, but he also fumbled inside the 10-yard line. The raw yardage won't tell you that. The EPA will. So it's a more sophisticated stat. And everybody will, you know, think that the raw yardage is telling the whole story, and it clearly doesn't. So when we look at the whole story, this is where the 49ers are, and that's where they were. And they weren't this low during the Christian McCaffrey healthy era. The last time they were this low was back before they traded for Christian McCaffrey. Fumbles, first downs, all that kind of stuff is important. The goal of EPA is to eliminate garbage yardage from the equation. I don't think that Mason has been running poorly, but I do think that Christian McCaffrey runs exceptionally efficiently. And I think that Mason has hit a wall in the red zone for the 49ers this year, where you've got to be even more on your P's and Q's than the rest of the field. As Jarrett says here, the whole story is the red zone, period. Red zone is everything. Yes, red zone. And these stats are going to weigh red zone because the plays inside the red zone are worth more expected points than the plays outside the red zone. So if you do better in the red zone, the EPA is going to be higher. But if you do worse in the red zone, the EPA is going to be lower. That's where the money is the red zone. So we will see if the 49ers can fix that. And it's not, you know, for McCaffrey, it's not just about finding the rushing lanes of the goal line. It's about the spacing that he can create, the threat that he creates. Football is a team sport, and you've got to operate cohesively. Christian McCaffrey, being as adaptable and versatile as he is one of the ultimate weapons to help a team operate in that kind of cohesive fashion. Purdy is playing. I think Purdy is playing elite football for the 49ers. His adjusted efficiency right now is number two in the entire league. I hope that you guys realize that. I think last week it was number one. He had his worst game of the season, and it's dropped down to number two. So if you look at the advanced metrics, the question from Tina here is, how come Purdy isn't playing elite? It's his contract year. The metrics indicate that he is. He just doesn't have the supporting cast around him to have the entire offense's EPA be at number one or number two. They're number five as a passing offense. So he's still leading a top five pass offense, but his adjusted EPA just as a quarterback, if you look at the numbers that try to isolate the quarterback from everybody else, he's still top two right now. So, and I think Joe Burrow just hopped into the number one spot. So I think that Brock Purdy is playing better than some people think that he might be playing. Just a thought. The 49ers are getting less separation than in the past. He is doing what he can, that's for sure. The tight window throw rate's been much higher. The time to throw's been much higher because he's had a scramble a little bit. Are there times when he's bailed too early? Greg Cosell thinks so. Greg Cosell said that he was playing a little too much out of structure. You know, nobody's saying Purdy's been perfect this year, but I do think that he's not being dealt the best hand right now, obviously, with no McCaffrey, with the running game at number 20 in efficiency, given what Shanahan's system requires. All right, that's it. I fly out to Seattle in the morning. I wanted to take this up to 10 o'clock. So go to the link. I'm happy to do shows until 10 p.m. for you guys. So you should be happy to put in your email address. Sign up for the San Francisco Standard. Click on the sports checkbox here. Put in your email. Every one of my articles that I write will be in your inbox within 2 minutes. And we write a lot of them. This was the article after the game. There are a lot of data-based articles that I think that you guys should would really like, such as my stat checkups. You know, I have all these graphs that I make. Take a look at the pass coverage metrics. We talk about Charvarius Ward. So I think you guys will really enjoy this stuff. So go ahead and sign up for the San Francisco Standard. The link is right. Oh, I put it in the comments section. I don't know where. It's probably too far past at this point for me to put it up on the screen. But Mike put it into the description, so you can go ahead and click on it in the description. All right, everybody, thank you for watching. Stand up. Sign up for the San Francisco Standard newsletter. If you're watching on Twitter, go ahead and sign up for the Twitter. This has been exactly 49 minutes long. The question to begin the show was, will the 49ers beat the Seahawks? The answer is yes.